We living out the good life, yeah. I ain't gotta worry about a thing.
Oh no.
Had some obstacles I overcame.
Oh yeah.
You don't have to ever be the same.
Oh Lord.
Cause when we change the mind, we change the game.
Yo, 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 what's going on, everybody? It's your boy, Kenny Clutch, with another episode on the Clutch Vision Podcast. It's your boy, Kenny Clutch. Let me do that one more time.
Do it. Nah, man. Look, I'm in the business. I know how it goes.
Yeah. Here we go. That's why I got these hand sinks in here. Here we go. Yo, what's going on, everybody? It's your boy, Kenny Clutch, with another episode on the Clutch Vision Podcast. I got another very special guest in the building tonight, my man, 50 Grand, Mr. Dave Schaller. You may have seen him on UFC, and he is now the Executive VP of Communications for the Philadelphia 76ers. Not only that, he is a husband, father, and a great man to talk to, man. I'm glad to have him on the show. My man, Dave, what's going on, big boy?
Kenny, it's good to be here. Long time coming. I've admired you from afar for a long time, and now we get to chop it up. I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, man. Yes, I appreciate that, man. Now, first and foremost, before we dive into anything, you know, I'm a big family man, and you know, I know you are too. You got a couple kids running around that's going to take your spot one day, you know. So with everything that's going on in the world, how has the family been holding up throughout 2020?
I appreciate you asking. Everyone's been doing really well. You know, I spent over 8 years at the UFC, and I've been with the Sixers now going on my fifth season. Most of my life professionally has been on the road.
Mm.
So to be at home and have dinner every night with my kids, my twin daughters, Lucy and Lenny, and my son, Santino, it's something that I have really found such a spark for. I didn't realize how special it was. Because when you're traveling and you're going to UFC events or you're going to basketball games or whatever, it's just so fast-paced.
Right.
So to be able to sit at dinner every night with my wife and kids, when this is over, and I pray that the pandemic ends soon enough, over, I will really cherish the moment that I've had, these moments that I've had with my kids and my family, just to reconnect and little things like, you know, playing with race cars with my son or watching TV with my girls. It's allowed me to appreciate life at a different level.
Yeah, you know, like, in, same thing for me, man. Like, you know, as a dancer originally and then traveling, you know, all over the world to teach and perform, and now being a speaker and a podcast host, you know, being able to work at home is so grand to me. So I don't take it lightly, because it doesn't happen too often to so many people, especially in your position. So, you know, I appreciate, you know, the good things in life a little bit more. And although every day is not perfect, but you know, you still have a love for everything that's going on inside your home, because you're here. You know, you get to watch your kids as you grow up. You get to, you know, like you said, play with the race cars and do those wild things with them. And versus you always being on the road, having to, you know, be the breadwinner for your home is different. It's the balance is crazy. But before the pandemic, how were you able to balance, you know, family and work?
It was the biggest challenge of my career, because growing up the way I did, you know, the son of an addict, my dad was in and out of the picture my entire life.
Mm.
And that inconsistency made it really challenging to have that strong male role model in my life. And frankly, I didn't have it. If I didn't have a grandfather, I'm not sure where I would have gotten some of the tips of the trade, I guess. For me, it starts with my wife. You know, she is really the point guard of the family. She keeps everything aligned. I think having a strong partner goes a long way. When you're in the business like you're in, or a business like I'm in, there is kind of a notion that you always have to be on. And because of like this thing, the cell phone, the news world moves very quickly. Everything moves really quickly. So you have to really prioritize your time. I don't want to be one of those fathers that looks back when my kids are 18 or 19 or my daughters are walking down the aisle getting married and go, damn, where'd the time go?
Right.
So I try to prioritize the time. When my kids were first born, I have twins who are 7. I wasn't great at it. And when my son was born, he's almost 3. I wanted to make sure some of the mistakes I made early when my twins were born, I didn't make again, which is like slowing the ball, taking the ball, air out of the ball, as they say in our sport, right. You know, in our sports world, and just appreciating the little things like having breakfast together or going for a walk or, you know, getting a chance to go on the rides at an Ocean City or at Disney World or whatever it may be. For me though, like in this world, in this demanding climate that we live in, I think you have to prioritize your family, because if you don't, you're going to blink and they're going to be old.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like, I've been speaking about this a lot, where we walk into a certain atmosphere, and inside that atmosphere, there's a certain climate, like you were alluding to just now, right? And within that climate, there can be a stronghold on that climate that every person is liable to adapting to that stronghold. And you have to have, you know, a strong mentality not to actually adapt to that stronghold, you know? And what's amazing to me, as I'm hearing you speak and you're saying, you know, that you grew up with a father who was an addict, it seemed that you didn't want to, you know, adapt to that particular stronghold, and you wanted to break away from that. And it seems like you did more to not be that, and you learn from him to what not to be. Is that pretty accurate right there?
It is. You know, for me, unfortunately and fortunately, some of the greatest lessons my father taught me was exactly what you said, what I didn't want to be. You know, I didn't have all bad memories with my father, but his addiction to opioids and alcohol, you know, always came before us as kids. It became, you know, for my mom, who is his wife. And, you know, I think as I look at my life now, look, Kenny, I'm not perfect. There's some days where I get sucked into that cell phone or stuck on Zooms all day, or, you know, I'm on the road traveling or whatever. And you hope that precious time isn't slipping through your fingertips. But I know in my heart that I'm providing a life for my kids that I didn't have. And it's always funny. When you grow up the way folks like I did, where you come from a trailer park and your family's on public assistance, sometimes you feel a sense of, I guess, bitterness if you see someone come up who has things handed to them or maybe had a better situation. Maybe they had closer to the white picket fence than I did. But for me now, I do everything so that my kids don't have to struggle in the ways I struggled. I want them to face adversity in life. I want them to have tough times. I want them to have to get a summer job and, you know, fill out college applications and grind it out. Because I think there's a lesson in life when you go through adversity. That being said, like, I don't want them to have to see the things I saw. So if I'm away for a week on a West Coast road trip, or I don't make it back in time for horseback riding lessons or whatever it may be, I always try to remind myself that I'm doing the damn best I can. Like any parent. And for me, as I said, though, you know, my dad's inconsistency and his absence sticks in my mind, because when it's all said and done, and I've breathe my last breath and it's time for me to go on to wherever I'm going to go on, I just want my kids to know that I gave it my best for them. And in this society, in this world that we live in, you could get sucked into what that definition really means. Does it mean you provide them financial security? Does it mean you provide them emotional support? Does it mean you provide them, you know, material things, tangible things, intangible things? I don't know. I don't have all the answers. But if it's centered in love and respect and fun, like, so much, we suck the fun out of life.
Right.
If I can provide them a source of positivity, toughness when they need it, because the world's tough, but overall, just like try to lay the roadmap for how to live a life of happiness. To me, that's success. So trying to find the balance in it all,
Yeah.
Look, I'm 36 years old. I think I got it figured out, but there's some days I think I suck
as a father.
And the more fathers I talk to, we all go through that.
Brother, you preaching to the choir.
And we need to, and you know what? It's, I saw a meme or something on the internet that was talking about mental health, which is something that's really important to me.
Yes.
And we as fathers sometimes feel like we need to be tough. Mm. And in some ways we do. And I respect that. Mm-hmm. But sometimes just being able to admit to a fellow father or a woman or whomever.
Yeah.
Hey, like I have my doubts too. Mm-hmm. Am I doing a good enough job? Am I working hard enough? Am I there for them enough? I think that's a good normal process because in the end, you hope it grounds you in the type of things you want to stand for.
Right, right. Wow, man. Yeah, you know, like there are days where I feel like, am I doing my best, you know?
Yeah.
Am I really like a great dad, you know? Because you get those moments. Like if we're being honest, you get those moments because, you know, kids are going to be kids. And then doing, like you said, in your business or in my line of work, you know, you do get sucked into the phone or the Zoom calls or anything like that. Like even right now, right? I plan most of my podcasts, you know, at night around this time because, you know, I can't be distracted, you know, doing the work with my kids up and stuff like that. So, and just recently I had a conversation with my wife. I said, I think I want to change my sleeping schedule because I need to balance, you know, work a little bit differently. And I made this transition from being a full-time dancer, choreographer, studio owner to now becoming a professional speaker. That's a totally different, you know, industry that we're talking about. This is a career change that we're talking about here. And but for the right reasons, it was something that I was pushed into. But my point is that what I noticed is that I was, you know, still doing the same routine of, you know, work, because I don't want my kids to grow up how I grew up. And I'm, and, you know, and you hit those snags and with us, you know, it was cancer and you hit those snags where we lost a lot and then we have to regain. So then my focus is, all right, I got to regain, man. Like I can't, you know, I think what we have to do is stay focused on the vision, but not focused on the distractions.
Yeah.
And many times people are, you know, either they're loyal to the vision or they're loyal to the distractions and they try to be loyal to both, but you can't. Yep. So if within the vision, your family is within that vision, you have to stay focused, you know, within that and not get distracted by the other things. And sometimes, hey, I just can't take this call right now. Like that's just, that's just what it is, you know. How has Tiff been the rock, you know, for you in understanding that?
Yeah, listen, early in our marriage, when I started my career in the UFC and we moved cross country to Las Vegas and we didn't know anybody out there, it was hard because we were trying to both discover who we were as a couple and then try to blaze our own trails as individuals and as professionals.
Right.
I think she has been the model of consistency for us. And frankly, you know, when we look back on whatever our children become, she will be the large reason why. Yeah. The trade-off of working in the sports and entertainment industry is if you want to have a family, you absolutely have to have a strong partner.
Absolutely.
Whether it's, you know, whatever your situation is, for me, I think Tiff has always had a good understanding of the trade-offs of this lifestyle in the business of sports and entertainment. And to work and to chase my dream here, it does mean I may have to step out and take that phone call when we're at a dinner. It may mean that I'm up at crazy hours of the night when we're pulling off a trade.
Mm.
It may mean there's a crisis involving someone in our organization that I have to jump off and handle. I think she's always allowed me the cushion of understanding what my industry is.
Mm-hmm.
And on the flip side, like I've, during this pandemic, I always respected and told her that I felt like her job as the caretaker of our children was far more difficult than mine. But working from home for the last 6+ months, I'm getting a whole new taste in how hard it is.
Yeah.
And now, in addition to being, you know, a mother and a wife and a friend, she's a school teacher for so many people doing virtual learning.
Yes.
Which is an opportunity I want to take to shout out all the teachers out there, because I think we understood what you did for a living, but we had no idea.
Before you continue, bro, let me tell you, my son's first grade teacher, 2 weeks in, she was done. No, she was done, bro. She tapped out, and, you know, she was a little older.
Yep.
You know, and they was like, all right, switch out, bring the young buck in to come and teach the class, because, you know, the vet was not, she was not having it, man. She was not having it.
It's just a whole different ball game.
Yeah, bro.
Like, trying to keep the attention of a first grader or a second grader or whatever on this thing?
Yeah. Yeah. No.
It's challenging enough when you got them in a classroom, let alone when you're in a setup like this. So I have such a newfound respect for that. But to go back to your question, I think we've always had a mutual understanding that if I was going to pursue this line of work, there was going to be pluses and minuses. Mm. And the pluses were that we were going to have an opportunity to do some really cool things, be a part of some really historic events, travel to some really amazing places. And the trade-off is we've missed some weddings that I wish we could have gotten to. Mm. And, you know, we haven't been at every birthday party or whatever it may be. Right. It's funny, when I first got into this industry, it's a grind out of the gate, Kenny. Like, you don't make a ton of money out of the gate, but you work a lot of hours. Mm-hmm. And when you're 25 or 26 and you start to see some of your colleagues or peers from other industries start driving those little 3 Series BMWs and, you know, getting the 3-bedroom apartments and things like that, you're like, is this really worth it? Mm. Should I be chasing what they got?
Right.
And now some of those same people that I was envious of, who are at the, you know, good jobs, respectable jobs.
Right.
The first thing they say is, man, what I would do to be in your line of work.
Wow.
And to me, that's not, I don't say that to come across as like a humble brag. I just say, like, that was my dream and I stuck to it.
Right.
There were a lot of situations where I could have took the detour. I could have taken the exit. I could have taken the paycheck, the more money here, whatever. Whatever I wanted, I probably could have deviated and chased. Mm-hmm. But to me, I still get that same feeling, and I'll get it when I tell you what I'm about to tell you. When I step on the hardwood at the Wells Fargo Center, and there's 20,000 fans, and our PA announcer, Matt Cord, says, Joel, the process, Embiid.
Yeah.
Or, you know, J.J. Redick last year hits a 3 to, you know, tie the game late, or whatever it is, whatever the moment is.
Right.
To be a part of that was everything that I dreamt of as a trailer park kid. Like, sports was my escape from the hell that my dad's addiction created. Mm. And to be able to have this as my career, it's not easy. It's a tough job.
Yeah, absolutely.
But those moments, that's why I do it.
Yeah.
And not having those moments for the last 6 or 7 months because of the pandemic have reminded me how important those moments are to me.
Right. Right. It's amazing, bro. That's amazing. You know, like, so let's retract real quick, you know. So you started off in the UFC. You got a break in there, right?
Yep.
You worked for the UFC for 8 years. And for those that don't know, I got to bring this up, Dave, okay? You already probably know what I'm going to say. So Dave is in the middle of two big behemoth men. And a fight breaks out, right? John Jones just comes across, and the you just see Dave like yo, like, what's going on here? I don't know how Dana expected you to hold these two here. Like, how did that even transpire, and what was going through your mind at that time?
So it's interesting. I have done the ceremonial square offs hundreds of times,
right?
And had no way. I've had 2 incidents in 8 years. And that was obviously the one that I got some infamy for. But Dana was flying out of the country to his family vacation, which he took every year. So when he does that, he would normally send me in to, you know, do the ceremonial square offs. John and Daniel Cormier have a long, deep-rooted history where they don't like each other.
Yeah.
And I will say this, and I don't say this lightly. If you've ever been in a car accident and you remember what happened after the car accident, like you just kind of feel like you're in a bit of a fog.
Mm-hmm.
That's what that moment was like for me.
Wow.
As it was unfolding, it was like I was having an out-of-body experience.
What?
Here is the number one pound-for-pound, maybe greatest fighter in history in John Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And here is number two pound-for-pound, two-division champion, former Olympian Daniel Cormier. And here's me, 5'8", at the time maybe 160 pounds, trying to stop two locomotives from going at one another. I laugh now because no one was injured. We were in the lobby of the MGM Grand, you know, mm-hmm. one of the most prestigious hotels in the world. And there was actually one of the untold stories is there was a group of senior citizens checking into the hotel right behind the backdrop that I got pushed into. So thank God none of them were hurt.
Yeah.
It's something I can look back on now. It's a part of UFC folklore. I've had so many experiences at the UFC that have transformed who I am as a professional.
Mm-hmm.
That experience working for Dana White and Lorenzo Fertitta, it couldn't have come at a better time in my life. It couldn't have been a better formative part of my career to teach me what it really takes to build something.
Right.
You know, we took the UFC from this little engine that could into a $4 billion enterprise.
That's crazy.
And it was done through old school elbow grease.
Yeah.
Picking up the phone, taking those face-to-face meetings and really storytelling and putting the art back in mixed martial arts. People don't realize these athletes are some of the most conditioned and highly trained athletes in the world. The appreciation I have for mixed martial artists is paramount. These guys sacrifice everything. But that moment that you referred to, I get asked about it a lot. If you know anything about me, like I always try to poke fun at myself. So to see the amount of memes and GIFs and everything else afterwards, it's not how I expected to get my moment in the sun, but there it was.
Hey, everybody, hey, you got to get it somehow, right?
I got
why not, why not still be around the best in the world while you're doing it?
That's true.
You know? True. That's awesome, man. Yeah, because I watched it. I'm like, is that Tiff's husband? Like, and I'm like, yo, and for those that don't know, I went to high school with Tiffany, his wife, and that's how the connection came. And I'm just sitting there, I'm like, oh, man. This is not, I didn't want to laugh, but I'm like, oh, this is crazy. Like, it was just a one of those shocking moments and everything, but I'm glad you came out unscathed and okay, ready to go to live another day.
Yeah. It was something. I remember everyone like, are you okay? Or like, I was completely fine. I popped right back up.
Yeah.
I just remember thinking, like, what am I going to do now? John Jones is like charging at DC. DC's red hot, like pissed off once a day. I'm like, we're going to have the fight right now.
Yeah.
I will say it became one of the best-selling pay-per-views of the year.
Yeah.
So to play a little part in that accidentally, I take it in stride.
There it is. So now you move on from USC, and now you're home here with the Philadelphia 76ers, all right? And we're going through the process. We're going through the process, and, you know, and as a – I'm originally a Chicago Bulls fan because I grew up a Michael Jordan fan. But I always had respect for the Philadelphia 76ers. I always loved AI was my man. You know what I'm saying? I got his jersey upstairs. You know, so, I from time to time, I'll go ahead and catch a game and at the Wells Fargo. And now we're still kind of in the process because we want that championship. You know what I'm saying? We want that ring. You know, how has it been for you? You know, during the process going through, you know, from the time you got here up until this point?
Well, listen, I started with the Sixers as an intern when I was 19 years old.
Mm.
And I had always hoped that I would have the opportunity to come back. And, and sometimes you take a funny road and a funny path to get there.
Right.
But for me, I have a chance every day to work with an organization that I think is home to some of the most talented people in the world.
Yeah.
What Josh Harris and David Blitzer, Scott O'Neill and Chris Heck and Elton Brand have built is truly special. And yeah, to have that opportunity every day from my hometown team, the moment I start taking it for granted or I'm not excited by it, I'm going to do something else.
Yeah.
But I think when you have an opportunity to build your team around two transcendent young stars in Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons the way we do, mm-hmm. You know, it's special. Yeah. Obviously, things didn't go the way we wanted them to this year. We fell short of our goals. It was a very, very odd year overall with the pandemic.
Yeah.
And some of the challenges we faced with injury. But I remind people, you know, with Doc Rivers coming in as one of the most respected, yes, most successful coaches in the NBA, second most wins all time among active coaches, an NBA champion, and a hell of a player in his own right, by the way. You can't forget that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Doc was no joke.
No joke.
Yeah.
So to have him as our head coach, to have these two young transformative stars, to have Tobias Harris, who played under Doc Rivers and had his most successful year playing under Doc, to have young players like Shake Milton and Matisse Thybulle, to have five draft picks in next month's draft, I still think we're climbing the mountain in a positive direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I would bet on Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid to be cornerstones. I know there's a lot of executives in the NBA who would love to have what we have right now.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Look, Kenny, you know this better than anybody.
Yes, sir.
The road to success sometimes isn't a straight line.
Nope. It's pretty weird.
It's pretty weird. So to be a part of it, look, we've had our highs, we've had our lows.
Yeah.
But to be a part of an organization that has won, you know, 50 plus games in consecutive years, been a playoff team for three straight years,
mm-hmm.
We're trending in the right direction. And this offseason is going to be really important. My biggest hope for this offseason is that we get to a situation where we can start having fans back in the arenas.
Because it's something different when you go to the arena, bro. Like,
way different.
It's when you get there, you know, you got the dunk squad, you got the dance team, you know, you got the cheerleaders, you know what I'm saying? You got Christian on the mic, and it's like, yo, it's an experience like no other, man. You know what I'm saying? And it's like everybody, win or lose, everybody's going to still have a good time at the end of the day, right? But obviously, you know, the ultimate goal is to win. So I definitely feel that. Getting back into, you know, the arena, you know, once we get there, man, I think things will definitely change. I see, like, this is me from the outside looking in, and I'm like, and I watch a lot of like sports shows and stuff like that, and I see, like, I hear what they say about Ben Simmons and the jump shot and all this other stuff, you know. But as me personally, my personal opinion, I'm not an analyst or nothing like that, but just the eyeball test is just telling me, I'm like, yo, man, they're just like one piece away. And maybe Doc is that piece. Maybe Doc is that guy to push them to that next level. Like, and I'm sitting, when I watched on TV, Doc Rivers is going to the Sixers, I said, oh, man. Oh, man.
Yep.
It's because he's not only like, he's like a man's man. He's a motivator. He's going to get you to play. He's going to get you in position, you know, to be successful. You know, he's not going to get these guys in a horrible position, you know?
No, listen, Doc, and I had a tremendous relationship with Brett Brown. Brett did some amazing things here in his 7 years and really helped get us to where we are. To get Doc in here is a major coup for our organization, and I give a lot of credit to Elton Brand.
Yeah.
You know, I remember watching Elton's first game as a Sixer from way up in the nosebleeds, and now every day I get to work with him. It's surreal to me. It's surreal.
Right.
And I tell him all the time, I said, EB, like, you don't understand, man. We're talking 12 years ago. I was watching you play, and now we're in the trenches every day trying to build a championship contender. Right. You're right, though, to be in the arena. One of the cool things, even when we weren't as successful in terms of making the playoffs, we were always one of the best-selling teams ticket-wise, and now we're number one in the NBA.
Wow.
And the reason is that experience that you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
When you decide to shell out the money, your hard-earned money, to go to a game, we feel strongly that you should get more than just the game itself. Not that the game isn't enough, but to have premium entertainment and really just an experience that allows you to disconnect from the world, lock in on basketball for a night, and have a great night with your family. That's what we are.
Yeah.
And that's something we pride ourselves on. But Doc, I had a chance to spend some time with Doc this week. He spoke to our staff. He spoke to the media. He, if you haven't had a chance to watch the Netflix special on Doc, I would encourage everyone to do it. Doc, he understands how to get the most out of young men and how to take an athlete and get full potential out of him. He's done it with Kevin Garnett. He's done it with Paul Pierce. He's done it with Rajon Rondo. He's done it with so many of the guys who played in the Clippers. Like, Ben Simmons is 24 years old.
24.
Joel Embiid is 26 years old. These are young men. And from a work ethic perspective, I see the work these guys put in the gym.
Right.
And to your point, sometimes it just takes that additional piece to get them over the hump.
Right.
We certainly think that can be Doc, and we certainly believe that, you know, Elton can continue to put this roster in a place where our organization can grow for a long time. We're not any less excited today than we've ever been. It stinks losing to the Celtics in the first round. That never feels good.
Yeah, bro.
But sometimes you got to get your ass kicked.
Yeah.
Sometimes in this life, sometimes you got to get your ass kicked. Yep. And
absolutely.
That's what happened to us, and now it's our responsibility to bounce back.
How was it, like, you know, managing the team, you know, while they were in the bubble? Like, well, you know, because I know it's a bubble. It's not the same, you know. These are professional athletes we're talking about that are used to thousands of fans and performing for them. Now that it's just pretty much, you know, we going right at it. No fans, just team versus team.
It's a good question. You know, I actually was not in the bubble. We sent, we had a small crew. We had 35 people. Go down to the bubble. We normally in the playoffs would travel upwards of 70. So we cut our traveling party in half. But the member of my team who was down there, we stayed in touch every day. And I think the NBA did a remarkable job.
Yes,
both absolutely. In health and safety, but also like making the most out of a situation. Right. You know, these players are used to living their lives and having their families available and, you know, being able to go to a restaurant and have dinner or go out to a club after a game and unwind, whatever it is. Their whole worlds got turned upside down, and the NBA did a remarkable job making the most of it. I know a lot of the players I talked to said that the biggest adjustment at first was just it reminded them of playing in high school or in AAU or in like some of the early days where there wasn't huge packed crowds. But it also emphasized the importance of communication.
Like yes.
Talking to your teammates and making sure you're where you're supposed to be on the floor. I think one day when our kids look back on this, this will be remembered as one of the most unique times in our country, but certainly in the business of sports as well. The thing I'm most proud of, though, Kenny, is the way our players and our league stepped up to make sure that Black Lives Matter remained a priority, to make sure that the fight for equality remained a priority. Like, that to me is far more important than any box score or championship run. You know, we have young players in our league who have platforms to drive real change.
Real change.
And you get a guy like Matisse Thybulle on our team and Tobias Harris, who in my eyes stood out. Guys who
absolutely
used their platform and marched in the protest. Not that our other guys didn't step up in ways, but those two stand out to me. It just makes me proud to be a part of this league, to be a part of the Sixers, and to be friends and colleagues with these guys, because it would have been convenient and easy for us to just say, well, we're sports and we'll focus on sports. But the worst thing we could have done would have been to shut up and dribble. That would have been the worst thing.
Yeah, that would have been the worst thing, you know. But the NBA has done, like, a remarkable job, like you said. And I think that, you know, from top to bottom, end to end, floor to floor, like, it was just, like, amazing. And at first, as a fan, I'm watching, I'm like, oh, man, I don't know if this is going to work from, watching it on TV.
Yep.
But then when you see the guys going 100% as if there were thousands of fans in the arena, you kind of get into it. And you're like, yo, man, this is dope. Like, even watching the finals right now, I'm like, man, this is pretty cool. Like, I actually like watching it, you know, right now. And it
doesn't. Could you imagine some of these games, though, with fans? Like, how good of the games have been? Could you imagine the Denver series? Or crazy. Could you imagine, like, it'd have been out of this world.
Crazy. Do you think the advantage, though, of the players not having to travel, you know, do you think like that, like there's an advantage there or a disadvantage?
For sure. Travel is one of the most difficult things for any professional athlete. And people will say, well, they travel private or that. What? Anytime you cross time zones and get in late at night and have to go to a new bed, like people who don't travel for a living probably take for granted the comfort of your own bed.
Yeah.
There's a lot of adjustments you make in your routine. And the most disciplined athletes I've ever worked with are the ones that can transfer from city to city, market to market, and still fire on all cylinders the next night.
Right.
It's a real challenge. I do think staying in one location for both sides, both teams in the series, was a good advantage. It allowed people to focus on recovery. These games have been fantastic.
Fantastic.
I don't think it'll ever replace the feeling of having 20,000 fans.
No.
But, you know, Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, and Michelle Roberts, the head of the Players Association, they set a path to get us back playing basketball in a safe way.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it in an incredible way. And for so many of us, we needed sports.
Yeah.
We needed it. And we needed to have it in our lives. And we're still going to have our challenges, but it's good to be back.
Yeah. Because, you know, when you watch TV, it's like the first thing that you see, man. It's like either somebody's getting shot and killed, or there's a crazy, you know, fire or riot or something like that. And it's just like, man, me as a life coach, you know, and a motivational speaker, I take that. And that's why, like, every day I even just started praying with my audience. You know, just let me just pray with you guys, because I don't know who out there needs a prayer right now, right? And it was something that I had to do, because when you're seeing those images every single day, that type of stuff or whatever, like, stays inside your mind and can trip your mind out so much. So my job is to, you know, speak life into people. And I just can't, you know, when basketball came back, I'm like, honestly, this is a good thing, because now people have at least something to distract them from the violence and focus on something positive. I get what some people were saying, that no, we need to, you know, continue to fight on. But I believe that the NBA had, like, the players had the NBA as their biggest platform to drive home the message. It's not that we were pulling away from it. It's that we need to drive home this message, and we need to continue on. And even after, you know, the finals, you know, we still have to continue to fight. We still have to push, you know, for that. But I do believe that, you know, it was a good move to make the season continue and finish up, and so that we can crown a champion.
For sure. And inevitably, you're going to get people that say, I wish sports would stick more to sports and not talk so much about politics or this or that. But
hey, but these are people too. These are voters. 100%.
You nailed it. They're people too. And frankly, if they don't use their platforms, I think we're missing an incredible opportunity to educate.
Right.
And to really share the most important thing of the last 6 months for me professionally,
mm-hmm.
has been shutting my mouth and listening.
Mm.
Just listening.
Right.
Hearing, and you think you know.
Mm-hmm.
Me as a white male, I think I know.
Right.
And then I hear stories, whether it be from Elton Brand or mm-hmm. Tobias Harris or my peers at the Sixers.
Right.
And it's easy for me to hear these stories and then move on to the next thing.
Right.
Kenny, guys, like, you live it every day.
Every day.
The appreciation that I have and for stopping and listening,
mm-hmm.
really listening. Frankly, not to get on my soapbox, I wish we could do that more as a country. If we just stopped and listened for a second.
Right.
Instead of, like, when you're talking, I'm already thinking about my response. No, just listen to what Kenny has to say.
Right. Right.
I think there's a lot of players in our league who've done an incredible job. We're fortunate to have some of them on our roster.
Yeah.
But I think athletes have done a really good job of saying, like, we're not just here to play sports, guys.
Right. We're not, yo. And to be honest, I appreciate, you know, you just saying that just to listen, you know, because I remember a time when, you know, I was in high school, 18. I'm going to my friend's house. It was New Year's Day. The clock had just struck 12. I'm riding down Route 130. And I'm from Willingboro. So I'm going into Del Ran to our friend's house, you know, just to kick it with him for a little bit. The restrictions or whatever were different back then back in 02, 03, you know. So I'm driving down Route 130. Cop drives on the side of me and then pulls back, comes around, pulls me over. And I'm like, for what, right? And I'm sitting there and he comes up to the door, license registration. Like, I just started driving. I ain't got no speeding tickets. I ain't got none of that, right? So I'm clean. No record, nothing, right? I go to Holy Cross High School. He didn't know that, but it, you know what I mean? Like, I'm a pretty good kid, right? And he then said, do you know why I pulled you over? I said, no, sir. He was like, you smell blackberry brandy coming from your car. And I'm like, huh? Like, first of all, how you know the exact brand of liquor that's coming from my car? Secondly, it's January in Jersey and it's cold outside, so the windows is rolled up, so I didn't have anything. So that's a bunch of bull. So he asked me to get out the car, and honestly, bro, like, that's when it was like, oh man, this is not about to end well right now. So I get out the car, I comply, right? Get out the car, go to the trunk. And I'm thinking he's going to plant something in the trunk. I said, sir, I'm just going to my friend's house, you know? He said, oh, where are you going? I said, I'm just going right here, Del Ran. Like, I go to Holy Cross High School. Oh, you go to Holy Cross? I'm like, yeah. Like, he actually searched my car to see if there was anything in there. And I'm like, yo, man, like, I didn't do nothing. Oh, I'm sorry, but we must have got it wrong and everything. You fit the description. And I'm like, I get it. Got in my car. Called my father up, who's a sergeant in the army. And I'm like, Pop, like, this is what happened. Like, he was tight, man. He was tight because the one thing that, you know, me and my dad has had this conversation, I wish I would have knew the law more as a youngster, you know? And I think that with everything going on, I think that's the one thing that we need to, as a community and as brothers, that we need to push for laws for the youngsters to know the law. Like, we need to know our rights. We need to have classes on knowing what it is, you know, when a policeman pulls you over, because when you're 11, 12, 13, you don't know this stuff. And then when you get to high school, you still don't know. Like, my kids don't know all their, you know, everything. I'm trying to teach them as much as I can because I'm doing the research and it's our job as parents. Yeah. But why not in school? Why can't we teach that in school? You know?
No, it's a good point. And, you know, as I reflect on what you just said, and I hope this comes out the right way, it bothers me that you even have to teach your kids that.
Right.
You know what I mean? It bothers me that we've reached a point where you have to proactively train your children on how to react when they are stopped.
Right.
By a police officer. And
yeah,
we both know a lot of the same people. Like, there's a lot of really good law enforcement people in this world. This isn't an indictment on law enforcement. This is an indictment on racism.
Right.
And injustice. And it, to hear that story, which I appreciate you sharing, is like, how many more times do we have to hear stories like that? You know, one of my best friends who I grew up with in Egg Harbor Township is a 6'5" black male, hell of a boxer, hell of a ball player, but a better dad.
Yeah.
And he told me a story right after the footage of George Floyd came out, and it really bothered me. Mm-hmm. He said, I've been afraid to go running in my neighborhood since this all happened. And I said to him, what do you mean? Like, everybody knows you around here. Mm-hmm. He goes, you don't understand. When I'm running, I'm just a 6'5" black guy with a hoodie on.
Right.
And I have my cell phone. And he said, I have my cell phone in the pouch. And what if somebody thinks that's a weapon?
Right.
And it's just, I thought I knew. I thought I had a handle on it. And these stories They just bother me. I'm really fortunate to work for an organization that's trying to leverage our platform.
Absolutely.
To fight back and to put things in place to really help, you know, the community. It's also, when you talk about South Jersey and Philadelphia, like making sure we're investing mm-hmm. in Black and Brown communities.
Right.
And having programs. We announced a partnership today with the African-American Chamber of Commerce in Philly, Pennsylvania, Delaware, and New Jersey.
Awesome.
To create some opportunities
right.
to spend with Black-owned businesses and create platforms for Black-owned businesses. So this whole last 6 months, I feel like what I thought I knew and what I know now are way different. I'm humbled by the experience, but I'm most proud of having conversations like this where it never would have crossed my mind to think like what you just said. I hope he doesn't plant something in my trunk.
Right.
What? But dude, that's the reality.
That's what we think about.
Yes.
That's what we think about. And I'm like, you know, I tell my kids all the time, you know, you don't have to be scared of the police, right? Because many kids, you know, they walk around and they're scared of the police. And so you don't have to be scared of the police because we're big believers in faith, you know?
Yep.
So you fear no man. You don't fear flesh and blood or anything like that. But do know, don't be stupid, yep. you know? Don't be stupid. Be alarmed. Be aware because there are people out here that will do, you know, some evil things to you just because. Like you don't know what that person is going through. You don't know their life. You don't know them from a can of paint. So carry yourself in a manner where, you know, you have respect, you have honor, you have dignity, you know, and you're not going to allow them to, you know, to dictate on which way you want to move. But be, you know, be compliant so that things don't get funny. Yep. And my kids understand that. And they ask questions and, you know, I don't ever want them to be afraid of a cop or an authority figure or anything like that. But I do want them to respect. You know, I don't think that. I think that police reform is something that needs to happen.
Agreed.
I think that, you know, in my personal opinion and in my line of work and what I've seen, I do believe that, you know, some police authority figures may need extra psychoanalysis to, you know, when they're coming off of the street, because you don't know what's happening out there. And then the second part is having policemen that are actually from that neighborhood policing that particular neighborhood. Because when you send somebody into a different neighborhood, you don't know these people. You don't know what they're about or anything like that. But if you have someone that is a part of that neighborhood, that grew up there, that know the people there, it's much easier to talk down a person that has a gun in their hand or a knife in their hand or about to do something crazy than it is for somebody that's not from there, because they're not going to listen, you know? So the being familiar, I believe is something that is key. And I always say this, when we change the mind, we change the game. I think mentally people have to, you know, change their mindset on things and how they view things, especially, you know, sometimes with police. Like let's not play the game where just because you got a badge, you have, you know, authority over another human being. Because when you take that badge off, you're a human just like I'm a human. So we just need to treat each other in respect and vice versa. You know, some people get alarmed really quickly and they're ready to go at a cop. Like, I don't think that's the way to go either. I don't think there's a right or wrong person here. But if we gain enough respect for each other, you know, like you don't have to disagree, just don't disrespect.
Yep. You said the key word, which is respect. And there's some days, if I take a step out of what I do professionally and just take a look at the world, like we've lost our way with that word a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, my sister, for example, is gay. She's married. She's mm-hmm. a proud member of the LGBTQ community. Mm-hmm. And I know the challenges she faced just coming out to us. Mm-hmm. Her blood, her family, people mm-hmm. who would walk to the end of the earth for her,
right.
because of the lack of respect that mm-hmm. is out there in the world. I just think we have to get centered around that word again. And, mm-hmm. you know, frankly, it's what makes some of my job challenging,
right.
you know, with Twitter and Instagram and Snapchat and all these other social media platforms, news and positivity and negativity are just so readily available.
Yeah.
People can tweet things at you that they would never say.
Yeah.
Face to face.
Yes, never. And I've seen you, you know, defend yourself a couple times from some crazy stories that was out there.
Yeah, it's look, I hope when I look back on my career professionally, I don't necessarily need people to say that they like they loved me or like that everybody liked me. Like I recognize in my job, I want everybody to I want to be liked like anyone else. But ultimately, I just want to make sure that they felt that they respected me because I gave them the same respect back.
There it is.
And it's not always going to be rainbows and butterflies. I butt heads with people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's productive headbutting.
Right. Like,
we should strive to have meaningful conflict in our world if it results in positivity.
Right.
I think what you said about police reform is spot on. No one is suggesting that everyone who wears a badge is bad. No one.
No, not at all.
We're just saying that we need to make sure that this world is policed in an equal and fair way. That's it.
Yeah.
That's what we're saying. And I think that's fair. It's respectful. It's the dignity that Black folks in this world deserve, Hispanic folks deserve, everyone deserves it.
Everybody.
It just comes.
I've always said change doesn't start in the White House. Change starts in your house.
Oh, I like that.
You know?
I like that.
It's the truth, bro. You know, change doesn't start in the White House. Change starts in your house.
Yeah.
If as parents and as people, if we're raising this next generation and if we're raising them correctly, imagine what the next generation after we're done, after we're gone and dead, imagine what it's going to be like, right? You can bury the man, but you can't bury the legacy.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So I feel that as parents, as fathers, wives, you know, mothers, you know, whatever, grandmas, grandpas, aunties, uncles, as we are raising these children, for those that are listening right now, you know, change doesn't start in the White House. Change starts in your house. So control what you can control, right, within your own home, and raise those children in the right way, in the way that God intended, you know, for you to raise them in, not, you know, going out and just doing what they want to do, but raising them and being a perfect, you know, as perfect of an example as you can be. Everybody's not perfect, but do the best that you can to raise them in the right way. You know, there's a scripture in the Bible, I think it's Proverbs chapter 22, verse number 6 says, train a child in the way that they should go, and when they are older, they will never depart from it. Now, it doesn't say train a child in the way that, you know, they think they should go. Train a child in the way that they should go, right? So if we're raising them in the way they should go, that doesn't mean that, you know, at some point in life, they may go astray. They may go on that rabbit trail that you were talking about earlier, right? But then they always come home because then they remember their teaching, just like you came back home to our Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah, we got it. We have to allow people to make mistakes in this world.
Yes.
That's how we grow. And I like what you said there. Starting in the home is a great way to do it. And frankly, sometimes, like for me, the things I learned in the home growing up weren't necessarily what you would put in a textbook.
Right.
They were damn helpful.
Right.
And they taught me a lot of things about resolve and adversity and endurance and tenacity. And I wouldn't change how I came up.
Right.
For anything. Yeah.
Same here, bro. Same here. You know, I grew up in a home where my mom and dad, they weren't home most of the time for about 8 years. My dad was in the Army, so he bounced around. And my mom, she worked in the AME church. So she worked in St. Louis for 8 years. I saw my parents every 2 weeks, sometimes every 3 weeks.
Wow.
So it was me and my little sister, you know, and we're 4 years apart. And, you know, my granddad would come down and watch us, or my cousin Tanya would come down and watch us or something like that, you know. But I had to, you know, grow up pretty quickly because, I was taking my little sister to school, dropping her off at the bus stop, making sure she got home, make sure she was with me. Like it was early and it was kind of hard where you don't have your mom and dad, you know, every single day.
Yep.
Right. And you're on the phone. And back then we talking about the 90s, bro. So There was no cell phones or anything like that. You couldn't talk with your mom all the way home. Like, you had to wait till you actually got home and got on the house phone.
Yeah.
They might have house phones anymore. Like, get on the house phone to talk. So, you know, I appreciate what, you know, what happened in my life, and I wouldn't trade it because it taught me how to be responsible. It taught me how to be respectful. It taught me, you know, sometimes you're going to have to grow up quick, and life is not all about fun and games. There's a time to play, and then there's a time to be serious. And, you know, there's a time to, like, go out and play in the mud, but then there's a time to strap up the boots and let's get to work, you know? So, and I train my kids like that, you know, every day. I teach my son, it's a time to be serious, and then it's a time to play, you know? So you got to learn how to balance the two, you know? So listen, brother, we running out of time, but before we do that, right, I always hit everybody with this question, okay? With 2020, we're in the fourth quarter now. We're in the fourth quarter of 2020, right? Fourth quarter, here we go. And you work for the 76ers, one of the most prestigious brands, you know, in the world, right? And if you had all 7.5 billion people listening to you right here, right now, to get them through the fourth quarter of 2020, what is it that you would say to them?
That is a great question. I think for me, the best piece of advice that I've ever received in my life was get comfortable being uncomfortable. Because in moments where you're uncomfortable, if you attack it the right way, you truly will A, learn about yourself, and B, have an opportunity to grow. We don't know for the first time in a long time what's around the corner with the pandemic, with the election, with all the things going on in our world. But if we can just embrace that these periods of uncomfortable nature can in many ways bring the best, it doesn't have to bring the worst out of us.
Right.
It can actually bring the best out of us. To me, trying to keep your mind in a positive spot, understanding that we are stronger when we come together. And when we fully embrace understanding and really truly saying it's okay to be uncomfortable, growth is possible here, I think that is the way I'm going to attack the remaining quarter of 2020, which I can't believe is almost over.
Yes.
There are going to be a lot of periods coming up where I don't have all the answers. It's going to feel uncomfortable. I'm going to get that feeling in my stomach. But generally speaking, I'm going to stay positive. And I like what you said. I think there's time to play. And there's time to strap up the boots. And I think we're in strap up the boots mode right now. Yes, it's time to get to work as individuals, as a country. And I would be remiss if I didn't say this. If you're not voting this November, however you're going to vote, you are minimizing the most impactful way you can use your voice. So whether it's voting by mail, if you have the ability to get out and do it at a poll, however you got to do it, it is a true privilege to be able to do it, and our country needs it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Make the right choice, guys. You know, wherever, you know, your mind is telling you to go, and I say that strongly, your mind and not your heart, you know, don't make an emotional decision. Make the logical choice that, you know, that goes with your beliefs and what you believe, you know what I'm saying? And therefore, we have to respect that at the end of the day. You know, let's not bash each other. Let's not hate on each other. You know, you're going to make your choice. I make my choice, you know, and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, right, we're all brothers and sisters here on this planet, right? And I say this a lot, you know, we have to understand that, and we have to be careful with our words, because there's 23,000 breaths that we take in one day on average. We don't know when the next breath is actually coming. So therefore, that's 23,000 blessings that you receive every single day, right? Just in one area of your life. So remind yourself, guys, you know, how blessed you truly are, like Dave said, to even get a chance to vote. There's some people that can't even, like, write to vote, you know, and they have the right to vote, right? But they can't actually write it in. They can't walk to go to a pole or anything like that. So just be blessed at the fact that you have the capability to do it. Feel me? So listen, my man Dave, listen, check this out, brother. We're going to end this off in a dope game. In the clutch, okay? So I'm Kenny Clutch, and this is In the Clutch. I started a company called In the Clutch back in 2009. In the Clutch stands for Inspirational Dancers Creatively Linking Upon the Culture of Hip Hop. All right? INDACLUTCH, okay?
Okay.
So I'm going to give you a letter, and then you give me a positive word that goes with that letter.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
Like
ding, ding. C.
Courageous.
L.
Longevity.
U.
Oh, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
U. Upbringing.
Ah. T.
Tenacious.
C.
Clutch.
There you go. H.
Heart.
There it is. That's clutch. That's clutch. That's clutch. My man Dave, yo. Like, listen, brother, I appreciate you so much for coming on the show. Give Tiff, the twins, and your son my love. Listen up, everybody. If where can the people find you at? Shout out your Twitter and your Instagram. Where can the people find you?
Yeah, you guys can follow me on Twitter at Dave Schaller or on Instagram at Dave Schaller as well. So I appreciate everything. This has been an awesome experience, and I have so much love and respect for what you do. My best to you and your family, and I hope we get a chance to do this again.
Absolutely. We definitely want to bring you back on the show, brother. Now, listen up, everybody. If you want to get in my text community, and if you want to get my free book signed copy by me, okay, you got to text the word SHIFT to 609-303-5344. Once again, that's 609-303-5344. You text the word SHIFT. I'm going to send you a link. You go ahead and you get your free copy of Rebuild, Rebrand, Reclaim. When we change the mind, we change the game. 4 ways to overcome adversity. It's a little booklet. You can get through it in a week and you can go back. I left some pages in there so you could take some notes in the back of it. But guys, this is something that you guys need for the fourth quarter. Okay. So, and if you loved everything that you guys heard, if you guys are watching this on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you're at, on Anchor, it doesn't matter. Leave a like, comment, and share this with your mama, your daddy, your uncle, your auntie, your grandma, your grandpa, your abuela, abuelo. Share with your stepdad, your stepdog, your stepcat, your step tarantula. I don't care who it is. Just make sure you share it with somebody that needs this message today. It's your boy, Kenny Clutch. Listen, like I say every time, when we change the mind, we change the game. Yesterday is gone. Tomorrow, worry about itself. And today is all we have. And if today is all we have, you impact today the best way you know how. It's your boy, Kenny Clutch, on the Clutch Vision Podcast. I'll check y'all later.
Peace. We living out the good life, yeah. I ain't got to worry about a thing.
Oh, no.
Had some obstacles I overcame.
Oh, yeah.
You don't have to ever be the same.
Oh, Lord.
Because when we change the mind, we change the game.